Welcome to the People, Planet, Profit podcast. I'm Hayley Jarrick, CEO of the Supply Chain Sustainability School, and today I'm joined by Robin Mellon. Robin Mellon has combined his love of the environment, passion for sustainability, experience with supply chains, and qualifications in real estate and finance to become one of Australia's experts on sustainable supply chains. The former Chief Operating Officer of the Green Building Council of Australia and founding CEO of the Australian Supply Chain Sustainability School, Robin is now CEO of Better Sydney. Project Manager for the Property Council's Modern Slavery Working Group and Supplier Platform and New South Wales Program Advisor for Better Building Finance. Robin was a member of the Australian Government's first Modern Slavery Advisory Committee, is a judging chair for the New South Wales Sustainability Awards and Banksia Awards, one of the International Well Building Institute's Global Advisory, and a member of Waverley Council's Environmental Sustainability Advisory Committee. Welcome, Robin.
Thank you, Hayley. Great to be talking to you today. I think after that bio, that's all the time for the podcast. So hopefully we can squeeze things in around here.
We'll wrap it up there. Thanks for joining us. Exactly how it all goes.
Worst podcast ever.
So obviously Robin and I are friends. We can't have picked that from a little bit of the intro there. So hopefully we don't get too casual in the conversation today and try and keep us on track. We're going to touch on three things. I'm going to kick off with the first thing on our list, Robin, and that's what is it like to run a sustainable small business?
It's a really interesting question, and I had to give this some thought beforehand because really mixed emotions and mixed reactions, and I'll narrow it down to four things. The first is that it's amazing, and I mean that from the bottom of my heart. Running a sustainable small business is amazing because there is exposure to extraordinary people and organizations who are quite literally at the forefront of social and environmental and economic change. And so, you know, whether it's amazing people working in supply chains or human rights and modern slavery or diversity, inclusion and gender, or even, you know, greenhouse gas emissions and energy, everything all the way through, that exposure is amazing. And so getting to see what's really happening and what's changing. At the same time, I'm going to be honest and say it's quite lonely. I think a small business can be, well, just you. And especially with COVID, especially with the pandemic and the lockdowns, it's been quite lonely. Video conferences are good, but obviously they don't provide the same level of connection. And I think that's something which we all have all missed in different ways. I think thirdly, running a sustainable small business is really quite inspiring. I get a chance now and again, whenever I down tools, just to look at what's been achieved. And that could be just as simple as a document, an explainer, or, you know, projects or meetings, but getting to the end of 2021 and, you know, breathing a sigh of relief on Christmas Eve and just going, oh my goodness, look what was achieved this year. I mean, much of that obviously in conjunction with other people and organizations, but it can be really inspiring to go, this is how fast things are moving. And I guess lastly, the fourth point is it's even more sustainable than ever. I guess running a sustainable small business, now that we're not flying as much as we used to, it really does come down to, you know, your power and your internet and your car, if you have one. In my case, that's an electric vehicle, but it's more sustainable than ever. And so that's kind of refreshing to actually be walking the talk now.
Yeah, I suppose that's one thing too. Often when I speak with a lot of people from small businesses, they think there's so many things that they'd like to do and it's so hard to get your teeth into a few easy wins along the way. And I suppose that's usually one of the benefits of small business, right, is that, you know, when the world changes around you, you can react quite quickly to those circumstances and be really agile in that sense of adapting to the world around you. And when you can do that and stay true to your values and make your business more sustainable, it must be quite rewarding.
Absolutely. And, you know, big businesses can be slow to change, but small can be much more agile, much more adept. At the same time, you know, we've got the, Better Sydney is a member of the UN Global Compact, so the UN Global Compact Network Australia. And, you know, once a year we have to show how we've improved on the year before. And I'm scratching my head slightly, like, I've got carbon neutral energy and I haven't flown anywhere. So how am I going to be better next year? Don't know yet. We'll have to work that out.
And I think that's kind of, continuous improvement is one thing. But, you know, when you're getting from great to brilliant, that's the hardest step that you can take, right? It's usually getting people from the base level to good is a big enough step in itself to try and get along the way. And I'm sure that you've you've influenced many people and organizations along the way with all of the different hats that you have worn, and three-piece suits, obviously. And really sort of being able to influence those things in different topics and different areas. And I think that there's a few things, especially from a social environmental point of view, that have really risen to the surface with COVID as being integral to that, to the sustainability of business. You know, how are we going to keep these things going? And I suppose a lot of people then sort of touching on the experience that you've had leads us into the second part of the second question that I would like to talk with you about. And that's kind of, you know, what's going to keep us busy this year? So, you know, last year, in the past few years, we've, a lot of people are talking about greenhouse gases and climate change. A lot of people are talking about modern slavery. We're talking about work conditions, human rights, especially with the Olympics going on at the moment. It's sort of forefront in a lot of people's conversations. So, you know, what does 22 feel like for you? What are the top three topics that you think will keep you busy this year?
Well, finding a top three was really hard because I wanted to include at least 11, but I've narrowed it down to three. They are supply chain related because you know how much of a supply chain nerd I am at heart. But I think first is modern slavery reporting. And, you know, yes, we've been building on this, but in terms of what's going to keep me busy, I think we're at last seeing the information come through from, you know, different platforms. Obviously, you know, the Informed 365 platform that has been built for the Property Council of Australia, but, you know, lots of different platforms across ZX and EcoVadis and Freedom and all of them. We're seeing that information come through, and there's a massive amount of information in there to allow us to have a look at, you know, what do our suppliers know? What do they do? What are they doing? But also, what do they need? And I think that's going to be, you know, one of the important points this year. What do suppliers need to be able to improve? That could be, you know, as the Supply Chain Sustainability School provides, that could be awareness raising information or posters or videos. But it could also be, you know, the connections between topics so that they don't think, oh, we just need to do this. They can see how everything relates. So I think, you know, modern slavery reporting is definitely the first one. The second is one which I will, if this was in a video, you'd see me waving my arms around already, because I think one of the topics that really became prominent in 2020 and 2021 was that of supply chain resilience. So, you know, massive supply chain disruption and procurement disruption caused by COVID, by the pandemic, by the lockdowns. And we've seen that sort of echo around the world and reported in lots of different ways. But one of the things that it's thrown up is quite how many eggs we've put in the one basket. And I think lots of organizations that have started doing this modern slavery reporting have realized quite how much of their dollar value spend is with very few suppliers. And when those suppliers get disrupted for whatever reason, they have massive supply chain issues, labor, products, materials, resources, whatever those are. And so that concentration, I think, is not a good thing. And we're going to have to look this year at how we build in more resilience by spreading those supply chains yet further. And that's a really long-term thing. You can't just snap your fingers and build a new supply chain. That will take years. But I think that's going to be one of the things that we're going to need to look at. And the third, and this is where my arms will start cartwheeling frantically, is the intersections between these topics. So, you know, we can talk about human rights and modern slavery. We can talk about greenhouse gas emissions. We can talk about gender and diversity and inclusion, all of these, you know, innovation and entrepreneurship. I think we need to be looking at the intersections between these topics to understand the really big, the strategic levers that we need to pull to actually not just help human rights and modern slavery, but greenhouse gas emissions as well, and diversity inclusion, and things like empowerment and education of women and girls, improving family planning will actually have multiple benefits rippling through multiple countries and supply chains. And I think it's those intersections that we need to start looking at, because it's great that we're starting to deal with these things one by one, but we need to be looking broader and understanding what those really big strategic levers are that we can throw our might behind, or our collective, you know, industry or sector-wide might behind, all that leverage, and really pull on to really change things.
Yeah, I think you're spot on with a lot of that. And a few things what you said really resonate with me. And the one that sort of sticks out is this sort of, I suppose, as we started to do all of the work in the, with the modern slavery statements and really starting to do that investigation into our supply chains, I know so many organizations just, it was the catalyst for them to actually know their supply chains beyond tier one, you know, and previously before that, all the ignorance that they had around the environmental and social impacts of their supply chains. And now they can't plead ignorance anymore, and it's really starting to find the resolutions in those and all the synergies, like you said, between, you know, it's not surprising that if you don't care enough about your people to enslave them, you probably don't do a few other things as well. And all of those little indicators that and red flags that pop up when you start to really sort of dive in there.
Now we can be all sort of, I can be all airy fairy and high level about, you know, those intersections between the big picture issues. But it startles me. It genuinely surprises me how some of Australia's largest organizations, and I'm not just talking property construction, I'm talking multiple sectors, they will have really well developed, as in, you know, well staffed, well resourced, well thought through policies around things like diversity inclusion or parental leave, which are, you know, touching on multiple issues, but they seem entirely separate to their policies around human rights or around, you know, whistleblower, type involvement, hearing the voice of the worker. And this is our opportunity to actually look at all of these together and think, okay, how do we give people a voice? How do we listen to our staff and our suppliers in order to improve things, not just for them, but for the organization as a whole, for our shareholders, if that's how you're thinking, and also for society.
Yeah, definitely. And I think one of the other areas that you've really touched on is around that the oversimplification of suppliers in that chain, like how much dollar spend is happening with just a few people and how vulnerable that can be when all the eggs are in the one basket, as you use the saying that you use.
And but we've also seen think that, we've seen that across, you know, automotive or, you know, technology or all of these. And it causes severe and long-term ripples through those, not just procurement processes, but, you know, community building or, industry changes.
Yeah. And I'm starting to see a few of those procurement and supply chain channels move into circular supply chains. So, you know, the same supplier you might ship your secondary resources off to might be one of the suppliers you purchase goods from as well, and how that cycle effect can really start to decrease the waste and things from different organizations and the complexities of those relationships that are your customer and your supplier and not either or, and how does that work with all the internal processes and things that are happening. Yeah. And those complex ecosystems and collaborations that are required to get the best outcome, as opposed to having this very black and white boundary level relationships between different parts of the supply chain. So hopefully we can get some more transparency through them and getting more of our supply chain collaborating with each other, which I know is sort of a common thing that you and I have been fighting for years. So hopefully that gets in there as well.
And hopefully this year, you know, the linear economy will be dead, long live the circular economy, but at least we can start making moves towards, or how do we put things back into circulation? How do we reuse these resources or products or materials in a much smarter way to make business sense, not just some sort of airy-fairy principle?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I'm very conscious of waste as a failure. You know, you have secondary resources. Like, if you wouldn't throw away money, then don't throw away your secondary resources either. And and really sort of tapping into those relationships that we need, because in nature there is no waste. So we really need to treat our businesses and our homes the same way that we would like to, in order to maximize the efficiency of all of those resources that we can get in that space as well.
We're seeing the very beginning of that coming through, and, you know, whether it's supermarkets or greengrocers offering the imperfect picks, or whether it's at last we're seeing, you know, in consumables or, you know, cosmetics, we're seeing packaging, which is not, you know, perfect pristine virgin plastic, but is made from recycled or composite materials. We're starting to see that pervading into the mainstream, and that's amazing, because it means it will then echo through into other sectors and other industries.
Yeah, and I really hope that some of those small businesses, like we to loop back to what we're talking to at the start, that, you know, it's often someone with a great idea in their garage, or moving back in with their parents and in their garage, that have had this great idea for a sustainable business and often go straight to consumer with a, you know, a GoFundMe page set up and, you know, you go and pre-buy something. And I really hope some of those small businesses actually step up to commercial level arrangements this year as well to try and boost the scale of some of those great Aussie inventions that we can hopefully take to the world as well in that space.
Absolutely. And I'm just putting this on the record. It doesn't matter how good my idea is, I'm not moving back in with my parents. Just letting them know.
Oh. Yeah, I know, I hear you. But I don't think they'll have me either, just quietly. Well, busting that myth, and we can move on to the last part, which is a terrible segue into my last question, Robin, which was around, well, what are the sustainability myths that need to be busted in 2022? I know this is usually a bit of a hot topic for me because you chat with somebody with about sustainability for the first time and they throw up all of these common things that, you know, I thought we'd put to rest a long time ago, but they still keep rearing their head. And so, I'm sure that you have similar experiences on different topics. So I know that you could probably name 47, but I'm gonna keep it to your top three. I'll even give you up to five, but three is probably good.
I can narrow it down to three. I think the first, and I come back to this, you know, again and again, because again, it doesn't matter the sector or the industry or the country, but one of the myths that I think we need to bust is that big business is bad. I think there is an easy, you know, tendency to bash big business. Oh, they're polluting, or, you know, it's all about shareholder value and not about real change or, you know, social outcomes. I think we need to understand the positive behaviors of big businesses and the real opportunities for leverage there. And, you know, whether you look at, you know, the ability for large organizations to come together and really change supply chains, or you actually look at the, you know, the investment by some of these larger organizations in creating something better, not just a bit less bad, but something good. And so that myth that, you know, big business is automatically bad, I think we need to grow up and move on from that, because there's a lot of great examples. That doesn't mean, and I will be very careful, that doesn't mean all big business is good, but I think we need to, you know, be very cognizant of what's going on and the opportunities there. The second, and we touched on this earlier, but this is a really important myth that, of course, underpins a lot of my work, is that these topics are isolated. You know, we've mentioned we could talk about food waste, or as we just were, or circular economy, or greenhouse gas emissions, or gender, or human rights. The myth is that these topics are isolated, right? We've got 0.2 of an FTE, so we're going to do a bit of work on human rights or food waste.
Yep.
The answer is they're all connected. That can be overwhelming, of course. Oh my goodness, it's too big. Let's not do anything this year. But I think what you need to look at is the way in which they're all connected, and therefore, you know, how can we, in any good change management perspective, how can we make the cost of inaction, you know, as you were just saying, waste is a bad thing. How can we make the cost of inaction substantially more and connect all of these together so we can be achieving multiple things? And the third and last one, it may sound obvious, but I'm starting to hear things around the traps. The myth that needs busting is that modern slavery is going away. Well, you know, we've got the Modern Slavery Act, we're reporting each year, it asks for continuous improvement, so another few years and we should be right. And that just gets on my nerves, because if anything, COVID and, you know, the pandemic and the massive supply chain disruption has made things a lot worse for a lot of people. And I'm not just talking about, you know, levels of poverty or lack of education or gender roles being entrenched. I'm talking about, you know, vast swathes of people being moved from, say, sex work, or, you know, being trafficked into other industries where their labor can be more profitable. And I think we need to get real that modern slavery is probably going to get worse before we start seeing real improvements, and it's going to be even better hidden. So what we need to start doing is start getting smarter about what we know, the way in which we're working with our suppliers, our staff, our connections, and actually build supply chains that with whom we can collaborate.
Yeah, I think you're spot on there. And I think that even just the thought process of some people have been using around modern slavery is sort of year one, we'll do our analysis. Year two, we'll educate the supply chain. Year three, tick, solved. You know, yeah. Like it's kind of in that, and it's that continuous rolling, that continuous analysis, the continuous education and training, the continuous working with the supply chain, the staying on the ball with the voice of the worker and the voice of your customers and supply chains that are sort of going to keep that prevalent. And it's going to evolve because guess what? You know, for hundreds of years, unfortunately, humans have been taking advantage of other humans. And, you know, just when you think you've found a way to prevent one human rights abuse and resolve it, another one will pop up somewhere else. And we just need to stay constant and vigilant to protect our species, you know, good versus evil and everything in between. So
now, having said that, I will try and end on a positive. And I've been, you know, I'm extraordinarily fortunate in that I get to work with multiple sectors. And as I said at the beginning, some amazing people, extraordinary people. In the last month or so, I've worked with, one of Australia's leading gold and mining resources companies, one of Australia's leading dairy cooperatives, one of Australia's leading timber producers, importers, distributors. And each of those are independently doing amazing things, and they are stepping up and saying, right, how do we source ethically? How do we make sure that we're working with our suppliers, not just handing them a plate full of things to do? How do we educate all of our staff to the point that they understand what this means and why it's important to them as people, but also to our organization? And they are all stepping up to implement real change. And I find that so encouraging that just in, you know, those three, you know, seemingly random sectors, there are people, you know, pledging to really change things in 2022.
And isn't that just exciting? So I know that, you know, it makes me wake up and come to work every day and enjoy my job as well because, you know, you can make money and care for the environment and people at the same time. And as the more people where that light bulb turns on for them, it just makes me smile and brings a warmth to my heart and hope to my future and to my kids' future and hopefully one day my grandkids' future. And so it really is a pleasure to come to work every day when I get to chat with delightful people like yourself, and to work with the supply chain to get towards to that end. So thank you very much, Robin, for chatting with me today on the People Planet Profit podcast. And I'm sure it's not the last time you and I will talk, and hopefully, we can invite you back again in the future for, another edition.
Thank you, Hayley. It's a pleasure to talk with you as ever. And yes, I look forward to these podcasts being a regular success.